Anne-Sophie Mutter, the undisputed queen of violin playing, returning to Roy Thompson Hall with the Mutter Virtuosi, an exclusive ensemble of 14 handpicked string players and scholarship recipients of her foundation. The concert is February 7th and marks the final appearance on her North American tour. The four-time Grammy Award winner will perform Vivaldi's beloved Four Seasons, completing the program with a concerto from Joseph Bellone, the Chevalier de Saint-Georges, and Unsuk Chin's Grand Cadenza, a virtuoso duo for violins. Anne-Sophie Mutter's career has been celebrated for decades. An award-winning violinist at just 6 years old in her home of Germany, by 13, working with famed maestro Herbert von Karajan, she soon was in performance with the Berlin Phil, the English Chamber Orchestra, and Daniel Barenboim. By 1980, she'd made it stateside with Zubin Mehta and the New York Phil, a debut in Carnegie Hall in 1988. And a brilliant recording career that's included, of course, Mozart, Vivaldi, and Beethoven, but also a nod to contemporary works. More recently, her award-winning various projects with cinema master John Williams have garnered massive streaming and sales. Her album Brahms Double Concerto, Clara Schumann Piano Trio, and the Violin Concerto No. 2 with John Williams both stars on the New Classical FM Top 20 chart over the last year. It is our absolute honor to have Anne-Sophie Mutter to the New Classical FM. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Mark. Wow, that's somebody different. Must be 300 years old.
My goodness. We know that's not true. There's this beauty on stage every night. My goodness. This is the end of this tour. How's it feeling? Is that it?
Actually, speaking of John Williams, now, after the performances in Toronto, or the performance in Toronto, I'm off to San Francisco to work with him once again on the second violin concerto. Some new film theme material is coming up. And I have to tell you, I mean, my musical relationship with this genius has been one of the greatest gifts and treasures and high points in my life. He's such an incredible person, genius as a composer in absolute repertoire as well as in the film work. He's a wonderful jazz pianist and such an outstandingly kind and warm person.
Johnny Williams, as they say, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And, you know, back in the early days, that particular recording, the last live recording, and then Across the Stars, I mean,
just
blockbusters. And talk a little more about that career and that collaboration.
I mean, I grew up at the foot of the Black Forest. That's about as far away from Hollywood as you can possibly be. But, you know, even in my little part of the world in 1978, Star Wars came into our small cinema.
Sure.
And I do remember the first time I heard, you know, these very rich leitmotifs, which are kind of illuminating every character in the film. And if you watch, you know, later Star Wars, you can really appreciate how multi-layered this thematic material is John Williams implemented into a film which was supposed to be a one-off. Mm. You know, nobody knew that there would be Star Wars 2, 3, 4, 5, and so on and so forth. Forgetting the pictures, I was totally taken by the music. And in the following years and decades, obviously, I would go to the cinema very often because I knew there was a score of John Williams involved. I became also a great admirer of his symphonic work, also of the many wonderful solo concerti he has written, like, for example, for Yu-Yu Ma and other great colleagues of mine. And when I was married with André Previn, of course, André knew that I would die to meet John Williams, and he facilitated that. So I think it's now 8 years ago, or maybe already 10, I met the great master and asked him, jumping over my innate shyness, wouldn't believe it, but I'm very shy. And so I asked for a few bars, and he was very kind, but very firmly, making sure that I wouldn't indulge in any hope, because he was very busy that time once again with a project with Mr. Spielberg. So Christmas came, and I thought, you know, I want to send him something, just also to thank him for the time he had taken. And I did send him some gingerbreads, German gingerbreads.
Lovely.
And apparently, as the story goes, and he tells it, he felt inclined, or maybe pressured, I don't know, into rewarding every cookie with a bar. And so a few years after that first installment of gingerbreads arrived, he had completed a chamber orchestra piece with harp, which was premiered in Tanglewood. And I started to slowly and pianissimo talk about my love for his film themes and if there would be any kind of possibility that he would, you know, rewrite, for example, or I Cross the Stars or Yoda, which is my favorite character in Star Wars. And a total miracle happened. He rewrote, I think by now, more than 16 of his most iconic film themes for me. And this is such a gift, such a treasure. I mean, if you play Geisha or a theme from Across the Stars or Hedwig from Harry Potter, it's like little miniatures, which of course you have in classical repertoire as well. And that makes it so difficult because you do not have like 25 minutes to nail it stylistically and all the rest of it, but you have only these 3 minutes and you have to immediately bring about that vision of that monumental figure, which people know from the film, might it be, as I mentioned, Geisha or Hedwig. So I have learned a lot by playing John's music. And then, you know, the second violin concerto is just a gigantically important and interesting and very, I would say, very unexpected. Also because the stem cell, if you want, of that concerto is jazz, yeah. Jazz improvisation. And I thought that is a particularly beautiful gesture of the great master towards the music form, which is so highly cerebral. And I mean, one doesn't think about jazz as that, but jazz is really the most beautiful form and most elevated form of music making for me, because it is composing in an instant and you need to be so incredibly skillful and of course, highly gifted to be able to have this musical conversation. And the violin concerto, in a way, you know, refers to that, to Claude Thornhill, one of the great, great arrangers and jazz musicians of the last century. And that it's in itself makes the piece totally unique, one of its kind.
I'm reminded, too, that I was speaking over the last year through 2022, noting that he was getting set to retire and from feature film. And then, of course, the Fablemans popped up, and now that's making this
huge. Wonderful?
It's great. Yes. Award season run, of course. He's got Indiana Jones coming up in the summer.
I know.
And then, and then he announces about a week or two ago that he's not retiring. So,
yes.
My goodness.
I saw the article. We are all so happy about it. It's colorful again, you
it
know,
is.
After that news.
I should mention the other record we've been playing over the last 6 months, Brahms Double Concerto and Clara Schumann Piano Trio. And Sophie Mutter and Pablo Fernandez, the cellist. Just a great offering, and it was just a nice palate cleanser for us. And maybe talk about that effort a little.
So Pablo Fernandez is one of today's most important and really outstanding cellists, because he has a sound quality and an intensity, a soulfulness of playing, and a kind of improvisando quality of freshness to everything. That is truly unique. He's from Spain. He's a scholar of my foundation since, I think, 5 or 6 years. And when I heard him first, it was clear that for the second and for the last time in my life, I wanted to do the Brahms Double Concerto with him as a recording. And so we were thinking about the conductor and the orchestra. And of course, as a conductor, I love Manfred Tonick, who is the chef in Pittsburgh, under other very, very treasured musical companion of mine. He agreed to conduct the Czech Philharmonic. So there is the Brahms, of course, coupled with Clara Schumann. As we know, both had a very intense, at least musical relationship. And Clara Schumann's beautiful piano trio is much overlooked on stage and much underrepresented when it comes to recordings. And very often it sounds rather, you know, lame and boring, which it isn't, because she was quite inventive and also passionate. Composer, wonderful woman, great career, 6 children, married to, you know, Robert Schumann. And most of the time she was the breadwinner because he was in an asylum.
Yeah.
An impressive, you know, life story. But the relationship between these two composers made it so apparent that we wanted to couple them on the, I think it's my newest CD.
Yeah, it's interesting. The National Arts Center Orchestra in Ottawa did sort of something similar, too, with that. It is a fascinating conversation point, because all those minds were at work. We remember them differently in history, but it's sort of a correction time right now.
Yes, definitely.
If you're just joining us, just a treat. Four-time Grammy Award-winning violinist and ensemble leader Anne-Sophie Mutter is here this afternoon. The 14-member Mutter Virtuosi will be here February 7th at Roy Thompson Hall. RoyThompsonHall.com to pick up your tickets. The evening will include brilliant performance of Vivaldi's Four Seasons, music from Joseph Boulogne, Chevalier de Saint-Georges, and Eun-Suk Chin for two violins. Now, you've recorded the Four Seasons numerous times. I look at 1984, 1999. Mm-hmm. You've performed it often. In fact, I think you might have performed it right here in Toronto at our radio station here at the Zoomer Hall when you were here with the Virtuosi back in 2014. So that's a nice memory for us. It's a well that you can return to often.
It is, in fact, because it's the most exciting piece of program music from the Baroque ages. Probably it's also the first piece of such a colorful background, because Vivaldi himself wrote the sonnets for each season, which then is musically descriptive. I mean, the dances, he writes about the dances in the summer, about the shepherd who is sleeping and the dogs who make their noises and the hunting in the autumn and the cracking of ice. And it's just incredible how he illustrates that in music. And you can never get tired of it, because you can never get tired looking out of the window and see, you know, autumn leaves fall or wind, a storm, or just the sunshine. And it's pretty much like that in the Four Seasons. It's very intense, and at the same time, very subtle, very personal music. And I always find playing it with an ensemble which is not terribly oversized, it is really like chamber music. It's like a conversation between friends, and a lot of spontaneity is possible with an ensemble, which obviously also plays without a conductor. So we are all very tightly knit together. And I do actually work with a Norwegian harpsichord player, who is obviously also part of being on stage with us since, I think, 30 years. And he is a great master of improvisation. So he will add his part. And by the way, if I may add, we also play as an opener for the evening in Toronto, the Concerto of Vivaldi for Four Fiddles, which is a very exuberantly full of life piece. And Vivaldi was actually a great influence on Bach later. And Bach also rewrote a lot of Vivaldi's material. So one should not underestimate Antonio, particularly not the Concerto for Four Fiddles, because I'm bringing seven fabulous young violinists to Toronto. Every evening we will alternate who plays the second, the third, and the fourth fiddle. Only I'm always playing the first. Sorry.
I mean, that's going to be the way it is. Yeah. I will point out, I watched the Medici TV filmed presentation fairly recently, and it speaks to what you're talking about, that you can return to it. And we see the intensity in that performance, and certainly you've played it over and over and over, but it's right there. It shows that it never stops being exciting to play.
Yes, definitely. And I hope it will be the same for the audience. And I guess the Eun-Suk Chin, you know, this grand cadenza, which is 8 minutes long, it's two violins duetting and also kind of showing off each other, you know, what they can do and what they can't. And then in the middle, there's this kind of serenity moment of a Bach chorale. And then we are kind of running off again into all the heights of virtuosity. It adds something obviously contemporary, but something of a different excitement to the program. I always find it beautiful if you can, you know, sail off to foreign and unknown territory. And I want to excite and invigorate the audience with that piece. And as it's only 8 minutes long, I think the roller coaster has an end, so no panic.
Before we do anything else, it is time for a little rapid fire. Five questions with Anne-Sophie Mutter. With a talent like you, we love to go a little off the cuff here, but I think you'll be able to handle all of these. Number one, you've been in the classical world since you were 6 years old. What's the biggest change in the business and the culture of classical music that you've watched take place?
I think we have more diversity, more contemporary music, more women on stage.
Yeah.
Not enough musicians of color, obviously, but we are going to the right direction. I would hope that we still look for individuality in artists. Sometimes, you know, over the last 40 years, competitions have taken away a little of, you know, the different viewpoints, because they make us all the same. So that's maybe a little bit the danger of the future. But other than that, I think we are in a good place, but we definitely need more education at schools so that music will stay alive and in the center of society, I guess.
What has stayed the same, and maybe that is a positive?
Oh, I think music itself, art, will always be there. You know, it will survive everything. It will survive all the démodé or being à la mode or whatever. It is a necessity. Music exists since, 40,000 years? That's the first instrument we found recently. So that tells you something, something which is so much connected with our ancestors, with our physical and our emotional well-being. I don't fear for music to, you know, leave us. It will be our loss if we are not turning towards it.
You have mentioned several of the maestros, and I've mentioned several as well, that you've performed with over the years. We just talked about John Williams, Zubin Mehta, Daniel Barenboim. The conductor that truly captured your attention and imagination, the one that really stands out looking back.
One in over 40 years of concert time.
I know, it's tough.
Of course, Karajan, but Rostropovich was a phenomenal musician. Recently, I worked again with Yannick Nézet-Séguin. He's just an incredible musician.
Firecracker.
Yeah, Lahav Shani is a young and upcoming maestro. And there are a lot of young female conductors. And, you know, I think we live in a very exciting time where there's a change of guard, which is good, which, you know, brings new intensity, new ideas, more communication with the audiences also about. And maybe also, you know, we stop talking from the stage down. I don't mean figuratively speaking, but that we are on eye level with the audience, that we just also talk more and engage more in an open conversation before or after the performance, so that there is not only artists coming on stage playing and then, you know, they go and there's silence.
That's interesting. And that's something we've been talking a lot about, just watching some of the performances that have been through Toronto over the last year. Mm-hmm. We could talk at length about that one. You are a champion of contemporary music, special commissions you've been a part of course. The composer that not enough people know about right now.
I think Saint-Georges, the composer from the 1800s, is definitely someone who has been overlooked by history. Of course, there are a lot of living composers who need to be heard more. I do see with great happiness that the audience, as well as musicians, feel much more comfortable approaching contemporary music. That's a good way to go. But we still have to consciously always make an effort, if possible, to look what else next to Brahms, Mahler, and so on and so forth is out there, because there are a lot of forgotten, fantastic composers in the past, female composers of color. I mean, there's so much diversity of musical expressivity, and this must be our goal, to really bring that to the stage.
All right. Lastly, from Across the Stars to the Violin Concerto, we talked about it earlier. John Williams, been such an important part of your career in recent years. The Star Wars piece you most enjoy performing on stage?
Oh, these questions, Mark. This is pure horror.
I know. I'm sorry.
It's impossible to choose.
Now, you did mention Yoda. You mentioned Yoda a little earlier.
Yes, Yoda is my favorite character.
Okay.
Because I'm not much taller than he is, first of all. And I would love to have his mental abilities, obviously.
Sure.
And it's just great fun. Yes, Yoda's theme is wonderful. I also love Hedwig a lot. And I almost think that the treatment the great master did with Hedwig for the violin is at least as good as the original version, but I'm biased, so.
And Sophie Mutter, it has just been an absolute pleasure to have you here on the air.
Thank you for your time, Mark.
We're looking forward to this concert. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.